Lord, I thank you for you all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatyampi Sabaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatyampi Sabaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangham Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyambi Tatiyambi Sabaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hiridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so, not to take that which is not given, not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct, not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority, not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so, not to publish other people's faults, not to extol oneself and slander others, not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings, not to be angry, not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiyampi tatiyampi savaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness.
We are here
to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Better than I did and what actually happened. Being much more informed and articulate and reasoned than I was when it actually happened. And it feels like a combination of an authentic subpersonality and self-hate, or just ego. It's a little hard to know whether there is a young person in here who not only didn't get to make good arguments, was never allowed to argue at all, just kind of wanted to get some of that energy out and say some stuff. And yet, maybe, well, as I talk, maybe I'm getting a sense of it. When that ball gets rolling and it happens so many times, it's just suffering. You know, it's just out of the moment. Instantly, when the awareness, when I come back to the into the moment, immediately following that is a kind of just a moment of suffering. It's some combination of disgust with this person for drifting off and embarrassment for what I might ever have actually said in some kind of debate or
that's kind of like
it's just a spot of mind suffering.
Yeah.
So it might start out as some inner child feeling strong and articulate, but it certainly evolves into just another opportunity to.
Yeah, that it's, it starts out as a way that you, there's a story being played out, and it happens over and over and over again, and that it's basically retelling it in a different way, in a way that you're more articulate, you have more reasoning, and you're thinking that it could be a subpersonality that just wants to get it out, you know, be able to have a chance to actually say what's going on or express herself. But you notice that self-hate, it could be self-hate getting in there, trying to just cause you to suffer because there's her looking at it and a little disgust about, you know, what could have possibly have happened, or that this is even going on, how, look how you're out of the moment. Basically another layer out of the story that is going on.
Piling on.
Yeah, piling on, exactly.
Yeah. And when I look at it, it's not really helpful to leave the moment, even to let the sub rant if she wants to. I guess, yeah. And yet, it's something that happens with some frequency.
That it's something that happens with some frequency, yeah. That it's a way that you get out of the moment. At least, that's what you're getting told, that it's a way to get out of the moment. And, I don't know what's occurring to me as you're saying that, as I was wondering if you recorded that. You know, whatever she's...
I haven't.
A little bit, kind of a little platform for her to... Just say, and then you get a chance to actually listen to it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I'll do that.
Thank you. Worth the shot. Thanks. Jen.
As I was listening to that, I was just seeing what feels like a similar process, and I could suddenly see it in a bunch of different areas, and so. A bunch of seemingly unrelated things suddenly had a common process, and let's see if I can express it. So it's like all different things happen, right, in the course of the day, just all different kinds of things, and there's this and there's that, and attending to this and attending to that, and that when it feels like when I'm just here, they just are there for however long they're there for, and then on to the next thing, and then on to the next thing. But it feels like what so easily happens is that conditioned mind takes it over, and then it's like it becomes unnaturally or something stretched out. So let me use a particular example. That might be way better. So I watch it a lot in... like planning for something, for example. So maybe it will actually be the time to be turning attention to something that needs to be, you know, putting the pieces together or something. And it's really, really fun. And they're really, you know, they just kind of click into place and see all these things. And then it's time to go on to the next thing. But conditioned mind pulls back and keeps planning way beyond when it's time to plan. So it's like it becomes obsessive. And so on to the next thing. The body, the form is on to the next thing. But it's like conditioned mind stays there.
You're right. It just stays there planning and doing something with it, going far beyond what really can or is productive or...
Yeah, yeah.
That the body's going on to something else, but it's stretching it out.
Yeah. And then I saw it too. I've been really watching this interesting process around... I'm listening to something that was suggested to me that I could listen to this thing. And so, you know, I've been listening to it whenever there are little periods of time. And same thing, I watch how it's very clear when the time to finish up listening for that time is there. But same thing, it's like it's interesting, I'm not even sure, but conditioning wants to keep listening to it. But it's time to finish that. And I don't even know quite how to describe where that comes from, because it's not even necessarily well, we really have to, what, go to meditation or something.
It's just that it's time.
It's just time. Mm-hmm. It's just from the perspective of life, I don't know, or whatever. It's just time, you know, on to the next thing. And so I was just hearing that in that last conversation that I see for me, it's like conditioning doesn't particularly care what I'm doing. There can be suffering in any of it. That by it attaching itself, you know, it's sort of the thing that we talk about, I think, of, something around, well, I don't know. Anyway,
you're saying something about conditioning attaching itself to, it doesn't matter what it is, but it can cause it to suffer over it because of how it just plays out in the circumstance.
Yeah, it's like just that it's guaranteed that pulling something out of even the last split second from now is going to create suffering. And so it feels like it's always trying to do that on some level, to insert itself into what's not actually here right now in this moment.
Right, yeah. But they could pull in something that just happened in the last split second and cause it to suffer over just that. That's what it does. That's how it works. It doesn't really matter what it is. It doesn't really care.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just, it's one of those places, at least for me, where the practice is to remember that isn't me. Because it can feel like, say, with the planning, for example, but I like it. You know, it's fun. Things are clicking into place. But when I really, really pay attention, what I see is, yeah, it was fun. But we're headed down a track we don't want to go down now. When it's not, kind of when we're finished with that for now. That's not what's here anymore. And if I'm engaged with something that's not here, sooner or later, and usually sooner, it's going to not be fun anymore. It's going to lead somewhere I don't want to go.
Right, because whatever you were doing was no longer what you're doing anymore.
Exactly.
Right? It's going to cause suffering because there's a attention going back to what it is that you were doing and trying to pull, or kind of stretching it out, making it go longer.
Yeah. Well, and what I just saw as you were reflecting that was, and the reason ultimately it will take me a place I don't want to go is because what conditioning is attempting to do is to train me to have my attention, to let it direct my attention. That's all that's happening in that process, is it's training me to give my attention to it. And so maybe in that particular moment, there's nothing terribly unpleasant going on or that sort of thing, but it's that process that puts the being sort of almost in danger, if you will. Because then, in a moment, you know, down the road, when it's starting to take me to difficult places, I'm trained to go there with it.
Right.
I lose the ability to put it where I want to put it. And that's kind of the essential point. Not even so much the content of where it's going,
right,
but that the training of I lose the ability to put the attention where I want it to be.
Right, because there you are, and you know that it's time to move on to the next thing, and yet the attention that conditioning is trying to get, it's trying to direct your attention, essentially. Mm-hmm. It's in control, and so you're looking at, even though it's not, the content of it isn't necessarily bad, or it's actually fun to plan. Mm-hmm. It's just the fact that you're turning your attention over to conditioning to direct, and in a circumstance where it could be not so fun
anymore,
you're kind of like you're training yourself to follow conditioning around, allow it to direct attention to things that you don't want it to any longer.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's irrelevant what the content is, just that process of having the attention turn away.
Yeah, exactly. To always remember that's really what I want to practice is the ability to choose where the attention goes, to direct the attention.
Yeah. And then you're also looking at how is it that happens that it does that. Like,
yeah.
Because you know that it's time, and yet it's like, I want to keep listening, or I want to keep planning.
Yeah. Well, and it's fun to see that on some sort of intuitive level, there is a knowing when it's time. Mm-hmm. And so it's fun to practice that. You know, it reminds me a little bit of some of the email classes sometimes we've been having, of really practicing that subtle movement, being able to see that of like, okay, it's time. And then the discipline of just putting it down and going to the next thing.
That's what you're reminding me of. It's like that, you know, the bell rings and you Yeah, exactly. You set it down. You know?
Exactly.
I don't know what in this lecture. I think Sherry was talking about watching a scene of a movie that you're particularly drawn to.
Yeah.
I don't know if she actually said this or not, but it's something that I've probably been carrying around for a while. It's like, you know, there they are, the Star Wars, you know, the lightsaber scene, and the ability to be able to just shut it off.
Yeah. Wait, but really, it's such a great practice. It's such a great practice. It's the bell ringing is the perfect metaphor. Mm-hmm. Stop. Done.
Yeah.
Walk away. We'll come back to it later.
Right. Yeah. Just watching it just go crazy.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. Thank you. Penny.
It does seem like conditioning is especially fiendish when it gloms onto something that I like. You know, it's easier to catch when it's something I don't like. But and it does. It feels like conditioning enlists subpersonalities. I mean, often when I catch I'm really in conditioning, I'm really, self-hate is really operating, I can check in and see that there's somebody, some little person who has an investment in that direction or inclination in that way or arose apparently from some situation like that, and that poor little thing gets enlisted. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what's fiendish about.
Yeah, the subpersonality is enlisted by self-hate conditioning.
Yeah. So so one of the ways that our conditioning gets me to continue with something is I can be bamboozled into thinking that I'm getting clear for the 900th time. You know, that repeating something over and over and over that may be initially just an awareness, the repeating of it over and over, if I'm not paying attention, I think that I'm getting clear.
That it's a process of getting clear?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
That means, repeating it over and over again.
Right.
It's the first time it was an insight, maybe, but by the 900th time,
right.
Maybe it's not.
Maybe it's not. No, maybe it's just repetition. And so I mean, it's one of the places it gets me. It's sort of my version of staying with something after it doesn't need to be stayed with. And I had this really interesting experience with a particular individual, a friend out in the community. Two different experiences with her that just helped me to see how unhelpful so much of that is, so much of the thinking. So I had an occasion to be with this person in a meeting and was reminded that I don't really enjoy working with this person. And then I was going to have lunch with this person. And so I was riding my bike to lunch, and I was getting clear that I really don't like working with this person, and often I'm not really enjoying her socially very much either. And I, about this 10th time through, I thought, this is not helpful.
Clear was, you don't really enjoy this person, and you're going to have lunch with this person.
That's right.
And it was just playing over.
And I don't really enjoy her socially either. So, thank God I was riding my bike, because I had plenty of time.
Yeah, because you were driven there.
Yeah, so I was partway there, I thought, but I'm going to have lunch with her, and so I might as well just figure we're going to have a great time. And so I had lunch with her, we had a great time. And I think that had I stayed in that story, we would not have had a great time, because that would have been how I entered the situation. But it was just really helpful to see how I was bamboozled into thinking that repeating that somehow was helping me get clear. and how it would have just set me up, you know, how it was intended as a setup to confirm itself.
Right.
When I actually was with her.
Yeah, there you are, you're right. That's what she's like, and that's what the situation
that's
is
right.
like.
And then, the next day, I had to encounter her again about something, and I had gotten this email from her saying she wanted to talk about this thing that we had already talked about. And I just thought, oh God, I'm gonna, you know, she's just going to give me the same spiel again. I went through this whole thing. So I got there, and what she had to say was quite different. Mm-hmm. And so those two things together just helped me to see how, you know, I guess expectation is one of those the manifestations of how we think we have control. I think it's one of the ways that the illusion of control plays itself out. Mm-hmm. Like, if I know what's going to happen, then I know who to be entering this situation.
Yeah.
You know? And it was just so clear in those two instances that I had no idea what was going to happen. The only thing that would have given me an idea of what was going to happen was for me to enter the situation in such a way that I made it happen.
Right. And there you are, the person who doesn't enjoy an interaction with this person.
Right. And even when I enter the situation being the person who knows how it's going to happen, it doesn't happen that way. Mm-hmm. And which was what happened in the second situation where I knew what she was going to say, and then she didn't. Mm-hmm. And so I was just looking today at, you know, why? You know, why do I get sucked into that? Why? And I think it is literally to be someone who knows. And then someone who will know how to be. You know, I was just thinking the other day, when I was a little kid, I just, oh man, I wanted to drive a car. I wanted to drive so bad. And, you know, I used to make these little, I had this little steering wheel and made the little pedals and I'd sit in the seat like that when I was driving the car. And I believed that you had to know, what you had to know before you drove was exactly how far to turn when you went into a turn. I believed you had to know that. That you had to be able to look at a turn and know how far to turn. I didn't know it was an interaction. That when you drove, you turn and it's all feedback. And it's something like that. It's some conviction that I need to know beforehand how it's going to go. And then somehow I'll be okay.
Right.
And all experience tells me that it's like turning a car. It's right. All feedback.
It's all feedback. It's happening in the moment that
in
you're
the
doing
moment.
It. It's not something that, you know, you have to plan ahead about how you're going to turn.
And if I do, I've been driving.
You are.
And so is every other driver.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's literally the experience of living out of the moment. It's
not, it has
no basis in what's actually going on at all.
Yeah.
And it's literally playing out something that could happen, but oftentimes doesn't.
Right.
Because life is doing something different than what conditioning is telling us it's going to.
And how free it is just to relinquish that. But again, it, you know, the seduction is, but knowing that,
then
I'm clear mm-hmm. and I'm prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And I, of course, am an I, who's
yeah.
clear and prepared.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That was interesting. That articulates my experience exactly. The two things about that really stood out for me were that the unhelpfulness of thinking. What book are we reading from on Tuesday night?
Oh, Sweet Zen.
Sweet Zen. There was a Sweet Zen reading about noodling. Actually, there were two about noodling. I don't know if I missed the conversation about that or if it had come up, but I've been looking at that since I read it a few days ago. I've been looking at that, and I definitely do that kind of instead of allowing the insight to arise and then just letting it go, trusting that other insights will be there. There's an engagement with it. It's a thinking kind of thing. And I've been wondering, and I don't know, but I wonder if I use my recording listening practice to do that. So I really want to look at that. I have a concern that I use that in a way to kind of take experience up into the mind and then kind of rehash it over and over again, and also create an I who does that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's really unhelpful, and it creates a reality, as we always say, where that has nothing to do with what's going on. And the part that I've been seeing also is how much, like, my part in what occurs that appears to be this reality. So, very similar to what Finney just said. You know, I had an opportunity with family recently, and you know, I had all these kind of preconceived ideas. It was a long opportunity too; it was a whole week, I had all these preconceived ideas about what that was going to be like, and it didn't turn out to be like that at all. But I think the reason it didn't turn out to be that way is because I, just like Finney said, I decided that I wasn't going to let it just be that way. I had it's amazing how life kind of orchestrates things in ways that are helpful. I had a day with family like a month before that really didn't go very well, and I brought that up, that it wasn't going very well, kind of, to be honest, with sort of an agenda about what they were doing wrong that was causing me that, which is a big part of, you know, just the whole victim thing I've been looking at. And what came out was, I mean, there was a way in which I was being really unhelpful. And it was really clear. I mean, that my mother was the primary person involved in, and she made it really clear what she wanted from me, which is just to be engaged. Mm-hmm. And my whole karma is to not be engaged, you know, to withdraw and not be engaged at all. So that was really helpful. Mm-hmm. I mean, after I got past the initial, you know, there's a little kind of a thing that happens there when you get information that you're not prepared for. And so I entered the second opportunity. Like, okay, well, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to see if I can be in the situation the way that people want me to be in the situation. It was amazing. It was easy. It was simple. It smoothed the whole thing out. Just everything worked. And it was just from this little tiny, it was moving out of that noodling. Here's what it's like. Here's what's going on, which has nothing to do with what's happening. Just is like this basic, a real simple kind of a practice of the alternative, and it just turned the whole thing around.
That you were just going to participate in whatever was going to be happening, rather than noodling about what it's going to be like, or coming from a place of an agenda.
Yeah, because if I had done the noodling thing, I would have been noodling about it while it was happening also.
Right.
And actually, I did that some. This thing happened, and I was projecting that it's the same thing that always happens, and this is the same process that always goes on, and it's going to turn out this way. And it didn't. And it was kind of amazing. It was like, you know what? I was completely wrong about that. I was 100% wrong about what I was projecting. But that's what the noodling does. It comes up with these ideas that are, and at least it seems like in my recent experience, 100% wrong 100% of the time. It does that here. It does it everywhere. Really.
Yeah, but that's all it results in, is it being 100% wrong. And what I'm just fascinated with is that it has the opportunity to keep doing that over and over again, despite the evidence.
Well, there is, from the side of it, there is no evidence that it's wrong. It's all the evidence says that it's right.
Right, because it just knows. It's like the identity. It's the I that's going to be there. It's going to be right. It's basically karma just living itself out, because it's going to see it through those lens.
Yeah. It's just amazing the power of getting out of it. It was interesting because right before the family visit, I had another situation where there was I didn't realize it while it was going on until after a while, but it kind of sort of set up the same dynamic where there's stuff going on. It's like, you know what, I don't want to deal with this, which is exactly what I do with family. You know, I don't want to do with this, deal with this. So I withdraw and just not deal with it. Uh-huh. But what happens when I do that is, I think even if people don't register it, like consciously, people feel it, and then they worry about me. So, like with my family, they worry, well, is he okay? I don't know what they worry about, but if it was me, I'd worry, is he feeling okay about the situation? Does he like us? Does he want to be a part of this? Is, you know, like those kind of things that are, for family, I mean, that's kind of big, those are big questions. So the other one was a work situation, and there was a person who was kind of in charge of it. And what I realized afterwards is, I think as I started to do that, he got concerned about my participation in the event. And am I there? So I started doing the same thing. This was before the family visit. I started doing the same thing with him, where I just started saying stuff. You know, I would say stuff about what's going on with me, or saying stuff about what I was noticing, and just to kind of be engaged with it. And it was funny because it's like this way in which I can't really control the situation, but I can influence it in a way that's helpful. Because there was this kind of a tendency to like be questioning me and kind of coming, but then after I start doing that, his attention was somewhere else. It was amazing kind of feedback for how, for one thing, all that noodling stuff is unhelpful, and how there's a way in which I can kind of through a behavior rather than a thought,
yes,
I can kind of put myself in a way that I can see is needed in order that works for the situation.
Yeah, what it sounds like is you're actually there and you're responding to whatever is going on. I mean, just even inserting yourself is anti-karma, because the karma is to not be engaged.
Yeah.
And when you pull away, then there's even an energetic kind of sense that happens that people are responding to, like, what's going on? And even though you don't say anything, it's felt. And to go up against it and actually insert yourself, even if it's just asking questions or to interact, that goes up against it.
It does. It's very difficult, actually. There's just kind of like this wall I have to get through. Mm-hmm. And the wall says, no, you know, just don't do that.
Yeah.
But once I get through it, then the energy gets freed up, I'm engaged, I feel good, I'm smiling. Mm-hmm. I think it's fun for other people, or at least, you know, not unfun in the way the other one is. And, you know, it just, everything about it works. But I have to get out of my head.
Yeah,
and I have this belief in these perceptions that I, quote, perceptions that I have about what things are and how things are. I just really need to get past that, because it really is, it's misleading me all the time.
Yeah. Well, it is really like that car, in an analogy, you know, trying to figure out how to turn, because it's always doing that, and it's not actually responding to anything that's going on. It's kind of like I gotta be a particular way. I gotta plan this. And so it's that noodling that just keeps us out of actually being able to just stay engaged with life.
Yeah, I thought that was a really good analogy too. That really does seem like how it is, and being. Like follow along through life with awareness, and just instead of drawing conclusions, just being open. And then, we've said 10,000 times, you know, that the information that we need really does pop into the awareness. But the karma to be thinking, you know, separate from thinking about it instead is almost irresistible.
So I have a different version of the knowing and the expert that I've been looking at. And my experience, and there are a couple of different pieces of content that I've been working with, and the story around it is always, I often experience shame or humiliation or second guessing or a feeling of inadequacy, because the question comes up, how do I know? And in looking at that, I found this unexamined belief of what an expert is. And the expert in the world that I was trained in is someone who has a lot of experience doing something and who is studied it or has been trained in it, or has a lot of experience and therefore comes from a knowledge base that is useful to tap into. And there's an automatic deference to someone in that sense of authority, because there's an expertise.
Right.
And so all of my life I've spent becoming the expert in a knowledge sense, that to know is to have power in some way. And to be in situations where there's an assumption of knowing because of the situation. So in past leadership positions that I've been in, I've been expected to know the answer. I've been expected to know to be the expert. If I don't have that answer, that it's a performance issue. Right? And so it's just interesting in practicing with different pieces of content or to do work in practice, how actually the expert is unhelpful. Because almost anything that I'm looking at, I can't actually know. There has to be an experience of it, so a self separate from life. Now, what on earth does that mean? I can understand it intellectually. I've had an experience of it, perhaps, but to have an opinion about something, well, how do I really know? And what I got to, interestingly enough, is that I don't have to know. And what I have to practice is actually being open to not knowing, because in the moment that I'm open to not knowing, the entire intelligence that knows is available.
Right.
And therefore, it's really to be able to inhabit the experience of life's knowing through which the answer is being manifested through this form, and that anything that knows actually prevents that from knowing. So in a very, very funny way,
right,
that the expertise of life experience in that database of intelligence can actually not be available if this form knows.
Right.
And so it was just this really, really interesting place where I may not, the piece of content, I may not have facilitated for 16 years, but there is an intelligence of knowing what is appropriate in that place that is lifetimes of intelligence manifesting in the moment. So I don't have to have facilitated for 16 years to be able to tap into that intelligence. What I had to be was practicing paying attention to be in the moment. And to be able to draw that. And it was just the most liberating and the most powerful experience. And I had that in, I was trying to do a perfect downward dog, and I couldn't. I mean, I tried and tried and tried and tried, and I couldn't do a perfect downward dog. And it was always, always wrong. And I had this moment of going, well, life knows how to do a perfect downward dog. 2,000 years of yoga are in your consciousness. And so I had that experience of just letting go, and it wasn't, I don't know whether it was a perfect downward dog or not, but it was the downward dog. And it was just so interesting to let go of that baggage of what it is that experience and expertise and knowledge and
all that we think that we need in order to actually be a quote-unquote expert.
That's right.
Or to know how to do a downward dog. It's like the very thing that we think is going to provide that. It's very much like what we've been talking about.
Exactly. So what I got to as a practice, which I've been doing for all of 48 hours now, is that the only thing I actually have to practice, and it's always this, that it's the paying attention. Because in that paying attention to being so present that I am not there, then the whole world of intelligence is available to manifest. And there's a knowing that comes from it that as soon as the I gets born, will evaluate. But in that moment, there's an expertise. So the practice expertise that I'm developing is accessing the database of consciousness. And to develop that trust in life that it will give me the answer that I need.
Yes.
And I don't have to know it before.
Exactly, yeah. And it's the trickiest part about it is being able to get out of the way for that to happen.
Yes.
Do you know?
Yeah, or to go back, that the moment that I have the answer coming from whatever life's informing, to second guess it. Because in that 1 second afterwards, conditioned mind comes in and says either, how did you know? Or there's a response from someone who's also conditioned that evaluates, assesses, and dismisses what was offered.
Yes. Yeah. So it's also not only getting out of the way, but also preventing it from coming in again and drawing you back up into it again, back into that evaluation of it, so that you can probably go back again and be the expert.
Exactly, and the expert actually is not open,
right?
Because it's a very rigid way of looking at it, and that's actually what causes the friction or the point of view debate between two people, is everybody thinking that they know.
Right.
And
they're not actually there to what is. It's almost like what we do with the part of us who has been abandoned. It's like everybody's so into the content of it all, trying to be right about every position, that we miss out on actually being here to what's actually going on. So it's almost like what's actually going on is irrelevant.
Yeah, I can feel it when I see that place. I come from, or this form comes from, or somebody else in that moment of intelligent originality that is so different from an expert point of view.
Yeah.
And the part that I also was aware of is the shame and the humiliation and the feeling inadequate and feeling belittled is actually the out-of-the-moment experience, because I'm the one who's having that experience. Nobody's actually doing that.
Right.
And so there's a point of view about the point of view, that's an engagement there, and in that engagement, all of what's coming through from life just goes by the wayside.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
So that was an exciting thing, that, you know, to be able to really have that belief on what an expert is to be completely overturned.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Or we're turning the expert over.
That's right. We're turning the expert over.
Thank you.
That's actually very much the experience I've been looking at lately, of just knowing that I don't know anything, basically. and that the only way I have access to knowing is to not know. It really seems that that's so. I mean, to get out of thinking I know or can figure it out or control it. Mm-hmm. And that's my access to it being possible, mm-hmm. whatever it is.
And we can't ever think that we know, because
right.
then we'll just fall right back up into it. It's like we need to use capital and small letters for mm-hmm. the knowing, don't we?
Yeah,
it's like
we do, yeah.
I know when I let go of knowing, which is, I know with the capital K or the case.
Right, yeah. And what feels like what's happened, so I've been practicing that more, and practicing dropping a lot of the familiar ways that this head knows, which includes planning and trying to get it right and all kinds of things. And what's interesting is that the experience of that and the response to that is not happening in my head. It's happening in my body viscerally. So there's a kind of a relaxing that comes with not having to know. And then on some level, it's like there's a conditioned conversation that goes on at a level that doesn't need words, that just takes over the form. You know, it's almost like, I will hang on even if you think you have moved somewhere else.
Right.
And I, it's not, I don't even know it's happening until it's there. You know, it's like a resistance that is so under the radar that it doesn't have to say yeah but or look out or think that. It just has to produce a certain sensations in the body, and then that's its way of getting me back.
Right. Because how does it get you back?
By not liking the sensations in the body.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So there's like an assessment of it.
Yeah.
There's like a conversation about it.
So what was wrong in the other realm, it's not wrong anymore, so this is what's wrong now.
Right. You know? Yeah, this is the current thing that's wrong. The sensations are wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yeah. And even when I'm able to sort of let go of them being wrong, they don't quite get, they still get labeled unpleasant. Uh-huh. It's like they're, you know, it's like it's a, and the amazing thing is that it's different than in the past when I've had the body has expressed itself, because it's like there's no, well, I haven't yet found the clue yet that that's going on. It's really hard to put this into words. So I can be, there's no, I guess I would say I can be believing that all is well, literally, believing that all is well. I'm not in a story that I know about. I'm not, as far as I can tell, suffering over any content. I'm going about what I'm doing. And then I'm kind of like hit with evidence that at some physical level I haven't been experiencing that all is well.
Hmm. And so you get hit with it.
Yeah.
So you're going along, everything's well, there's no evidence that you're suffering, and all of a sudden you're hit with the fact that there is something wrong.
Yeah, that in somebody's worldview, that must be so. I mean, it's like there's a level of tension in the body that somehow I'm not aware of until it's just impossible not to be aware of it. But so the transition from I'm not sensing anything wrong to ooh, this is really uncomfortable. It's like I don't think it really happens that quick. I think it's going on.
Even when you think you're well?
Yeah. So there's something there's some clues I'm missing.
Uh-huh. So let me just describe it. So you're going along, everything's well, you're not suffering, no evidence of it, everything's fine, mm-hmm. and you're hit with the sense that you're not fine,
mm-hmm.
and what happens after that is there's a sense that even when you were fine, there had to have been something going on with there that wasn't fine, because it must have been lurking underneath there somewhere.
That's what
it can't just be all of a sudden like that.
That's my sense. That's my sense, mm-hmm. So attempting to practice noticing at the level of, is there something going on, you know?
So the idea is that if you can kind of sense while you're going along thinking all is well, that where is that there's something not going well?
Yeah.
It's almost like looking out for something that's wrong.
Yeah, it's like sort of like how, what's the message I'm not hearing? What's the signal that I haven't caught,
so the idea is that you are, let's see, because with the logic of that, it's like you must have been unconscious
at some
while
level.
you were fine, that being fine and everything going well and not suffering is a form of unconsciousness.
Yeah, there must be some element of that in there. Yeah, there must be, as far as I can see.
There's something that you're not seeing.
It may just simply be that I don't know. I think somebody sort of feels like they're needling it right now, but the level of nothing wrong is a different level. That sense of all is well is a different sense of all is well than my usual sense of all is well. So my usual sense of all is well is everything's in control, I've got a handle. This is a new sense of all is well where all really seems well. I mean, it's you know, feeling as much as I'm able to be present and aware and, you know, not have anything going on. And so it may just be that conditioning is so threatened by that it's using its best available means, which in this conditioned system is the body, to protest.
Uh-huh, right. You cannot be here.
You cannot do that.
Uh-huh, right.
And you can't have that.
Yeah, and it'll convince you that there's something that you were missing something while you were going along with all as well.
Yeah, I mean, it may just be that. It may just be it's like, uh-oh, she's a little too far outside the gate, mm-hmm. And we know how to get her.
Right, get her and keep her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this is very relevant, but I think that I could say fairly accurately that I'm an expert at golf. And it is beyond obvious that playing golf and being an expert at golf are kind of two different things. The very best performance, golf performance, there's nobody there doing it. It's just so obvious. And most of the time, though, that's not quite the experience, is that there's not that being so deeply in that place. But the only thing that is helpful is perhaps having one clue, one trigger, one focal point. We call it a swing thought in golf. You know, just one little thing that if you get two, you're dead again. It's one. You know, do one, you focus on one thing and then you're back in. And you know, I used to talk often about parallels between golf and practice. Mm. I haven't done it in a long time. It's time to do it again.
Instead of golf.
But that seems so to me. In practice. You know, sometimes presence just seems to be available. It's just, things are quiet. There's just, and sometimes it's just, it piles on so hard, there's no getting away from it. But kind of in most days, having just a reminder to something. And it can change from day, it can change from hour to hour. It's something to come back to. Mm-hmm. You know, this day we're sharing perhaps something like engaging, mm-hmm. or kindness, mm-hmm.
That would be equivalent to the swing thought.
The swing thought.
It would be the swing thought. Wow. Yeah. You're directing your attention to one thing that will bring you here. And is that why there was not two things, because that requires one to happen and another one to happen after that. It's almost like a thought after.
It's too quick for two things.
Stick to one.
Where's one? But I don't know if it's true for practice. I don't know if maybe you could have more than one thing, but it's pretty true for golf.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, this reminds me of a thing that I practiced for a while that I want to practice again, and I did with people, which is when you're doing an effort, then you could say an image to yourself, say something to yourself, like one thing, or like if you're doing something hard, I would encourage people to say, I'm strong, I'm flexible. You know, healthy, coordinated, or you know, just some, or I'm love, and then it's amazing how the skill, whatever it is, becomes much easier.
Yeah, well, it's like I'm not engaged in how this has to be perfect, or this has to be the perfect down dog or whatever like that. But I'm actually out of that, and I'm actually focused on what's here.
Right. So my workout partner, she's super coordinated, but if she's not really, like, if she's not expert at something, then she thinks she's not good. And it's super tedious to be around. So we did a workout that I made up. She wants to learn something new. So it's a tricky place, right? Because you can't learn anything new if you're not already an expert. And so she hasn't learned anything new. I teach her since the end of the Vietnam War. And so then we do something new, and then the whole time she's saying, I'm not good, I'm not good, I'm not good. So I made this rule that if you say you're not good while you're doing it, of course she is really good. And if you say you're not good, then you have to do 10 burpees.
10 what?
Burpees, do you know what those are? It's this really horrible thing where you have to jump and do push-ups and jump and push-up. And it's really hard, so you don't want to have
to. You don't want to have to do that.
No. It's like something they would do in the Marines, you know? And
I wonder if there's an equivalent to, anyway.
The equivalent to
burpees. You know, if you do something in practice that you really don't want, you don't want to have to do.
Uh-huh.
But yeah,
so you don't want to. I would say for everyone here, what you don't want is to suffer. That would be the equivalent of burpees.
And it just seems so physically obvious that you don't want to go down that road.
Yeah. Right. So what we said, what I said is every time it was hard in this agility thing, I'd say something like coordinated and agile, And plus, she didn't want to do burpees, so she didn't ever say, I can't do it. But then, like, that's going on all the time in life. Like that. And so I just want to state that publicly, that I would like to bring that more into my current present practice. Because what I'm practicing with, I'm on, like, assignment number 5 from the class of, like, letting go of an identity. So the identity is, I have too much to do. And so the thing I'm replacing it with is, there's all these things I want to do. And there are. I mean, even I don't want to do the thing, I want the result of, you know, the end result of that task. And so it takes constant, you know, anything with karma, right? It takes every breath after. Every breath is trying to do its thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was interesting. Even the language—that's something that you have to do versus something that you want to do.
Yeah,
it's just subtle, but it's like it has a completely different feel to it.
Right. And so I just think the same thing. Like I want to bring in those words. I want to bring that in more.
That it's that's what you want to practice with, is to live from that perspective rather than the image with your friend is that I can't or I'm not good at, to replace it with coordinated agile.
Right, and or like in the group on Friday night, like to replace it with unconditional love.
Yeah.
Like cleaning, unconditional love. Mm-hmm. That could be the thing that I practice. That maybe I'm going to practice with that because I'm really taken with that. So that'll be my word. Well. My 2 words.
We can have 2 things in that case.
My phrase. This is my phrase.
Yes. Thank you.
That was very helpful because when I do go to my gym class, they're very rigorous classes, and I often feel like I'm just way beyond my limit. And what I just find myself saying when we're doing endless repetitions that keeps me going is I just keep saying yes. You know, each repetition I just say yes. Mm. But it never occurs to me to use that other places. Mm. So I'm going to start using that other places too. It's helpful.
It has application.
It certainly does.
Yes.
It's very simple.
Good.
I just realized that was fun to hear, because I realize I've noticed this recently, and I hadn't sort of all the way bubbled up to consciously realizing it, that oftentimes, I'm trying to think what situation, because it's particular, it's like where I'll be going along and something very physically challenging will happen, not even so much like doing hard work, but like feel really, really tired or hurt somewhere physically, or that kind of thing, really low blood sugar or whatever. And what kicks in immediately is, you're all right. You're okay, I'm right here. And it's just so interesting. It's like it just comes from somewhere. And then it's truly completely fine. And I think what that does, because I get that recently, is that it prevents any story from beginning around it. It's just,
the thing that's going on, and it truly is completely all right. Whatever's, it's just the physical thing, and it usually, I mean, it passes within a shocking short period of time, but I just saw how that's such a kind of beautiful benefit of practice,
yeah.
That the, what just arises with that is, all right, I'm here.
Well, it's the thing that arises in consciousness that is would not be there if the continued story about, you know, mm-hmm. how you were mm-hmm. Was allowed to continue, but it just mm-hmm. arises out of that.
Yeah.
And it's where your attention goes, and all of a sudden your experience is that.
Yeah, yeah, and it's not. It's interesting that it's you, so it's not like I'm okay. Mm-hmm. You know, it really is like a support coming from somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. The support coming from somewhere, and also from